When you get home tonight, what are you going to do? Have me tea. And we've had your tea. I suspect that many of you will be collapsing, as Steve just said, into a chair to watch TV. Is that right?
Yeah.
No? Some of you will be, some of you won't be. Some of you, like Meg and me, will be watching The Durrells, followed by Grantchester. Others of you, well, you might watch something else. ITV gives us the opportunity to nip out and make a cup of tea every 10 minutes, doesn't it? Grantchester. For those of you who have not been following it, it's a story about an unusual alliance between the Reverend Sidney Chambers, handsome young man of this parish, played by James Norton, and the local police detective, Geordie Keating, played by, you could only have him, Robson Green, another Geordie. And one of the common lessons that these two leading characters have to learn is that for every action, there is a consequence. Let me give you a summary for those of you who don't know the story so far. And for those of you who do, it's going to whet your appetite for tonight. Inspector Keating, who discovers the attraction of a civilian member of the police force in a small imaginary town in Cambridgeshire. And he finds her too hard to resist. A married man with children. And last Sunday's episode ended with him agreeing not to see her again. It didn't quite end just there. Actually, it moved on a fraction. It ended up with them in bed, making love. The Reverend Chambers, he too is struggling with his attraction towards another beautiful woman. A married woman. With a child. At the end of last week's episode, he and she have agreed that they shouldn't see each other anymore. Tune in tonight to see if they keep their good intentions, which, if they do, will please, amongst others, the Archdeacon, to whose ears this has come, or will they, like the Inspector, will they be unable to resist their desire for one another? And if you haven't been watching it, you're going to watch it now, aren't you? Sexual attraction. Sin. Adultery. It's all there. 9 o'clock tonight. And as we know only too well, this isn't anything new. It's what sells books. It's what makes films. And as we're reminded in our Old Testament passage this evening, it was there in the Bible. There's nothing new under heaven and earth. So like tonight's episode of Grantchester, the scene is set. The main characters are ready to come on stage. And the characters in our story are Abram, Sarah, Isaac, Hagar, Ishmael, and God. Now, to fully appreciate the ins and outs of this Old Testament story, we need to go back a couple of chapters in Genesis. Abram and Sarai had received a covenant promise from God. There was one thing lacking in their life together. Abram had no heir. Nobody to whom he could pass on his riches. Nobody to whom he could pass on the mantle of responsibility for God's chosen people after his own death. A death which was nearer than it was to his birth. He was getting an old man. And this weighed heavily on Abram's mind. Abram wanted a child. Not just a child. He wanted a son and heir. And in chapter 15, we read that the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. To which Abram responds, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me, since I remain childless? Followed by a further promise from God to Abram. A son coming from your own body will be your heir. Look up at the heavens and count the stars, if indeed you can count them. So shall your offspring be. After which we read these words from verse 6 of chapter 15. Abram believed the Lord, and he credited it to him as righteousness. So far, so good. What could possibly go wrong? Well, that story soon begins to unravel. The more you get into the story, the more it becomes less like a Mills and Boone romantic novel, more like a Greek tragedy. God and Abram are center stage. Enter Sarah. Stage left. I love the way chapter 16 opens with one word. Now. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. Now those of us who have experienced childlessness know how difficult that can be, especially when all our friends and all our family find it so easy to have children. It was as if all the blame for this rested on Sarah. A little like the account earlier in Genesis of the serpent tempting Eve to tempt Adam. It's Eve who always gets the blame. And what did they say in the past, and actually still say today? What is the duty of a wife, of a king, or a leader? It is to provide the king or the leader with an heir and a spare. An heir and a spare. And disaster. There's no heir, and there's no spare. But, as we read on towards today's passage, we discover that Sarai has an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. Enter Hagar. Stage right. At the rear of the stage, almost hidden from view, but soon to become a central character in our story. The Lord has kept me from having children, says Sarah to her husband. Go and sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. I did tell you it's more like a Mills and Boone novel than anything else. And what is Abram's response to this? No, he replies, no! I'm married to you. You're the only one that matters. I will continue to trust God to provide me with what he has promised. Actually, that's not what he says. Rather, Abraham agrees to Sarah's plan. And off they disappear, stage right. Into the shadows. And then, the next time, we hear about them. Bingo! Hagar is pregnant. Sarai and Abram's problem is solved. Soon Abram and Sarah will have a child. And it's a son. A son they can bring up as their own. They have a son and an heir. But as yet no spare. Everything in the garden is lovely. But soon it all begins to unravel. Hagar begins to despise Sarah. And Sarai, she blames Abraham for what's happened. Just listen to what she says. You are responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms. And now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. It's all his fault. Seems very strange to me. I put my servant in your arms. Surprise, surprise. Of course he does what she wants him to do. And the more you read, the worse it becomes. It's threatening to become more like a Whitehall farce than a Mills and Boone novel. So what does Abraham do? He tells Sarai that the problem is hers to resolve. It's your problem, it's your making, you sort it out. Which she does. By ill-treating Hagar. To the point where this pregnant servant runs away into the wilderness. And most probably death. Problem solved again. Of course not. We still haven't had the birth of the heir. So the curtain comes down on Act 1 of this story. Act 2. The heavily pregnant Hagar finds herself in the desert, where an angel of the Lord appears to her and tells her to return to Sarai. And she does. And a child is born, and as instructed by the angel, she names him Ishmael. Ishmael, which translates, God hears. Then God appears to Abraham, giving him and Sarai new names, the ones we usually know them by, Abraham and Sarah. And God goes on to renew his original promise to them of a child. Only for Abraham to laugh at the preposterous nature of such a promise at his ripe old age. Now God is firmly centre stage in Act 2. As he goes on to lay down the requirements for the circumcision of all the males, and gives to the yet unborn child the name Isaac. God has promised him not just an heir, but a spare. And this is followed by the visit of three strangers who repeat God's promise, this time within earshot of Sarah, who also laughs at their foolishness. In her eyes, the suggestion that she will give birth to a child in her old age, after so long a time without giving birth to any child, is just foolishness. It's absurd. Which, apart from a couple more digressions, brings us to tonight's Old Testament passage. As God honours his promise, the promise that he made originally to Abraham, the promise that he renews to Abraham and Sarah. God honours his promise. And Sarah's pregnancy comes to the end with the birth of Isaac, which translates, he laughs. Now is the time for celebration. Now is the time for all Israel to laugh with Sarah at the safe delivery of Isaac, rather than at her for being childless. Unfortunately, this in turn results in even more animosity between Hagar and Sarah. It's a good story, you know. You don't have to watch Grantchester tonight. It's a good story. And the eventual, as we heard, expulsion for a second time of Hagar into the wilderness. And this, as we heard, against Abraham's better judgment. And once again, God appears to Hagar and instructs her as to what to do. To go back. To return with her child. And now, as Act 2 of our three-part play draws to a close, we find Abraham and Sarah back center stage, together with their new son, Isaac. We find God returned to his director's chair. Hagar and her son Ishmael are once more off stage. But still in the wings, waiting for the director's call to step once more onto the world stage. For the time being, the curtain comes down on this family. I can only describe it as a tragedy. We can all go off and have our wine or our beer in the interval, until the interval bell rings to mark the time for us to return to our seats, and for the curtain to rise on Act 3. But that will be for someone else to tell you about in this journey through Genesis. Good story. A sad story. In the meantime, though, what lessons can we take from this part of our journey through Genesis? For me, as I reflected on it, there are a number of simple yet important truths for us today. In spite of all their mistakes, in spite of all their questioning and unbelief, in spite of their failure to trust, in spite of everything else, God remains faithful to his initial promise to Abraham and Sarah, no matter how ludicrous it might have appeared at the time. The promise that they will have a child. A child of God's providing, rather than their own questionable tactics. The promise that human failings, emotional, physical, and spiritual, the promise that such failings will not stand in the way of God's promise, not only to provide a son, but to provide the means for his chosen people to enter into their promised inheritance. God is still in the director's chair, and we need to listen carefully for his directions. While secondly, this tells me, this story, that we need to be ready not only to hear what he says, but also to believe what he says. To believe those promises that he makes to us, no matter how incredible, unbelievable they might be. And thirdly, to live it out on the world stage where we find ourselves, no matter what that may mean for us, for the people of God, and for the world. Enjoy your story of Grantchester, and as you watch it, reflect. There's nothing new in this world. And actually, faith in God and trusting him is as old as history. But like all characters in history, it's challenging. There are times when we go our own way and think we know better. But ultimately, when we go God's way, it will work out and it will be right. Amen.